Get ready for a journey into the heart of Bridgeport politics with In Absentia, a new podcast from Connecticut Public's investigative team, The Accountability Project. Learn about the city's past and present political dysfunction and the systems that enable it. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.
Funding provided by Gregory Melville and Susan Fox and Kathleen Bromage.
This show is an encore presentation of the Faith Middleton Fuchmoos. Hope you enjoy this second helping.
Wake me up before you go, go. Don't leave me hanging on like a yo-yo. Wake me up before you go, go. I don't want to miss it when you hit that high. Wake me up before you go, go. Cause I'm not planning on going solo. Wake me up before you go, go. Take me dancing tonight. I want to hit that high.
It's great to have you joining the party on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. Get ready to smell the coffee brewing. If you're a coffee lover, settle in because we're coffee crazy on this fresh edition of the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. Which country has the most coffee shops? Why has instant coffee gotten better? And why do we gravitate to coffee cafes in the first place? Is it true that coffee is good for the brain and the body? 10 out of 10 coffee drinking doctors say yes, it is. Okay. My coffee loving co-conspirators are here in our studios at the Big G, Gateway Community College, downtown New Haven, Chris Prosperi, Robin Doyen Aiken, and from KJZZ in Phoenix, Alex Province. Hey, everybody.
Hey, Faith.
Hey, hey Faith. Hey, guys.
Coffee. It's yeah. My favorite beverage.
I know. I have to warn you guys, I had an extra cup of coffee today to prepare for the show. It was my research, so I'm a little buzzed up. And I'm ready to go.
Not just
we're
buzzed,
talking
happy.
Fast.
That's right.
We've got the author of this book, The New Rules of Coffee, is going to join us in a little while. And I devoured this book. It is so fantastic about coffee. Let's do favorite coffee cafes.
I've got one super close by. For everyday coffee, this girl runs on Dunkin'. So I'm a Dunkin' Donuts girl. I know that's controversial.
Which is good,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Dunkin's
but,
good. I like it.
Yeah, that's for my everyday kind of coffee. Yeah. But when I want to have a special coffee house experience, my favorite place is Coffee with a K and a question mark over in New
coffee?
Haven. Yes, coffee.
Right here in New Haven.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, yeah, it's
funny. I used to hang out there.
Yeah.
I love that spot.
Yeah,
such
I do too.
Such a good spot.
Okay, Chris?
Every Sunday in the morning, Arethusa.
Oh.
Now, of course, they have a great little bistro across the street and an ice cream place, right, a little creamery. But on the other side of 202 and Bantam, they have Arethusa Amano.
Yeah.
And I remember it just from growing up in that area. It used to be a Best Eaten donut shop, which was where I got my coffee. So now I go in there and it is elevated because they make the best espresso, the best cappuccino.
Even
the
their sugar is expensive and they're, you know, like fancy and their napkins are
everything. And you sit in a nice chair. They have fresh croissant in them. I mean, it brings you to Europe and you're in Bantam, Connecticut. And the smell of coffee when you walk in there melts you.
I think what's happening with this, I've been doing all this research this week about what the trends are in coffee and we've got this expert coming up. They're saying that coffee has just really become elevated everywhere, even at gas stations, even at the bodegas. People expect a little bit better coffee, and all these places are stepping up.
People don't drink bad coffee anymore, right?
No
one tolerates a bad cup of coffee. Like, you know, on a sailing ship, as long as it's hot, pours like mud, no one drinks coffee like that anymore.
That's interesting.
See, I'm on the other side. I think there's no such thing as a bad cup of coffee. It just does something to me when I drink it. I don't know if I'm alone here. The smell, it's not just the drinking. So there is something about the taste and having really good coffee. But any coffee, as soon as you put the mug down in front of you and it starts steaming up towards your face, you can see as the first wisps of steam hit my nose, the smile starts growing. And I feel different. I get this energy. I haven't even sipped it yet.
You must have been a detective in a past life or something in the 50s, like Dragnet.
In my little coffee shop.
Some of the coffee experience is psychological. I completely agree with that.
100%. There's something about it. I can even say that when I'm drinking coffee at home, I have a favorite mug. If that mug is in the dishwasher and I grab another mug and I'm drinking the same coffee at home that I drink, it doesn't taste the same to me when it's not in my special home mug.
Okay, you ready for this? There is a taste scientist at Yale who says there is evidence for what you just said, that part of it has to do with touch and the instrument.
The vessel
really does make a difference in terms of coffee drinking. So there's evidence behind what you said. All right, Alex, where do you go?
Yeah, I'm lucky I have two great ones. When I'm in Hartford, I walk right around the corner to Story and Soil. And you remember talking about those guys. They restored that block on Capitol Avenue in downtown Hartford.
Yes.
They are really coffee fanatics. They do that cleaner, more acidic, lighter roast style, you know, where they really concentrate where the beans come from. And then when I'm in Madison, I walk to Willoughby's, which is like the center in town.
Another
and everyone
one.
Meets there and you see friends and it's like a meeting place.
Yeah, we have Willoughby's here too in New Haven. Mm-hmm.
There used to be in New Haven a place called Judy's, and it was the size of a large closet. On Sundays, I would go down. You'd see a lot of people, sandals, sometimes bedroom slippers, just shuffling down the street. There were no tables. You'd be standing around. It was to be part of that crowd, just to be in the atmosphere of that place. My favorite one right now is in Greenport. That's on the North Fork of Long Island. It's a place right on the water. It's called Aldo's. You can tell when the guy is roasting. People are like dogs. They catch the scent, and you can tell the tourists because you can tell they're following the scent. Where's that coming from? And they go
in
there.
Oh,
yeah, he's got the seats all covered with the coffee bean bags
and,
you know, for the fabric. And it's funky. It takes forever for them to pour whatever you want. But it is so fabulous. So for me, I like the sense of community in the place. And that's really true among Cubans.
Mm-hmm.
Every culture is a little bit different about this. Cubans are there not exclusively for the taste of the coffee. They're there to be with the crowd, to be with one person, 10 people, whatever it might be.
And the coffee's good, though.
When I lived
really
in Miami.
Good.
Really good, yeah.
When I lived in Miami, we went every day before work, we went to a little Cuban coffee truck. Mm. And it wasn't just about drinking the coffee. You just stood there. Again, no seats. There's just groups of people standing around, and everyone is so friendly. There's something about coffee. It makes you see people in a different light. It makes you more friendly, more like you want to go and talk to people after you have a couple sips of coffee.
And it's not CBD coffee that you're describing. It sounds spectacularly like CBD coffee.
The Cuban coffee. It's served in this little paper cup that's tiny that the handles fold out and you just shoot it down and it is
half
so
filled with sugar.
Yeah, it is so strong.
It
makes your hair stand up on its end. But after you drink it, you're like, okay, wow, I feel like a new person.
Yeah, see, that's caffeine for you.
Your feet aren't on the ground.
So I was on
buzzing around.
I was on the ferry over to Long Island yesterday, and the bartender on the ferry is John Venduras, and he's Greek. And I said, now tell me about Greek culture. You grew up in Greece. What was it like to have coffee there? He said it was really a gathering place to sit and complain. And he said, everyone complained. And he said, my aunt would then read the future in the coffee sediment at the bottom of the cup.
Nice.
That was her thing. It always had two themes. There was always a woman or a letter, an international letter was going to arrive. That's so funny. So I said, okay, tell me what's your favorite coffee now that you're grown up and you're doing drinks here on the ferry. And he said, I think coffee's got to be chewy. He said, you know, sometimes you want a wine that's chewy. It feels chewy when you sip it. He said, that's what coffee needs to be.
I think in Greece they drink Turkish coffee. It almost has the grounds in it. It's very thick.
And strong.
So the second I sat down to have a glass of wine at the bar and I started interviewing the bartender, John, about coffee, an explosion of conversation happened. Everybody sitting around started talking about this. And this guy, he's a contractor, and he said, oh, I have two old school percolators at home. He said, you know the aluminum ones with the glass top and you can look down? He said, I have two because I use one for parts if something should break.
Yep.
He said, I can't imagine drinking coffee out of anything else. You have to let it sit there. Sure. It's sort of the old school equivalent of the French press.
Mm-hmm.
He said,
version.
It makes the best coffee. He said, but they don't make them anymore. So I shop tag sales.
To look for them.
He looks for them. And the minute he finds one, he's totally excited about it.
Everyone in the 70s and 80s had one, right?
Yeah.
That's how we made coffee here.
That's how you ended your dinner party.
Yes, with the you heard the little click, 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 right? It started
your parents
shaking.
Go into the other room, and then they make then come out with nice coffee cups and the percolator. Who needs a cup of coffee?
Well, I'm curious about whether people do anything personal with coffee at home and that it's your little secret thing that you like to do. Remember when people used to put eggshells in with the ground coffee? That was a thing, and I don't even know why they did it. Somebody was next to me on the ferry, and he said, my wife puts cinnamon. She always puts a little cinnamon in her coffee.
Or a little cocoa powder.
The state right next door, Rhode Island, is coffee crazy. Coffee, coffee, coffee. There are probably more coffee shops in Rhode Island.
Wow.
It's unbelievable. They're obsessed with coffee milk, these coffee syrups. You go to an ice cream store, everybody's eating coffee ice cream. It's a coffee, coffee thing. Anytime somebody wants to have a meeting, they break from work and they'll say, come on, let's go get a cup of coffee. It's a thing in Rhode Island.
I wonder if they're more productive as a state.
I say it's the anti-cell phone. Every day I see all the people I work with. They're always like grabbing a phone and it's isolating. But at my place at 4 o'clock, it's coffee time. And I make everyone a nice frothy cappuccino and I hand them out. All of a sudden, the phones go away and people start talking to each other again. And the same thing when you go to coffee shops, right? People are actually engaging again.
Well, in the coffee cafe that I used to go to, Judy's, people really talked. Somebody would occasionally open the paper, although it was so small you'd probably knock somebody out if you tried to open it. But people were talking, and that was really great. But when I go into other places, like in the Starbucks that I go into, everybody's sitting with a laptop.
Yeah.
I think Starbucks, we'll talk about that later, I think, right? Starbucks is a different kind of coffee shop.
Well, they have free Wi-Fi, too.
Yeah.
So people go there.
They promote that, right?
I need to work in quiet, so that doesn't really work for me as a workspace, but I do agree that it is a great kind of hangout place, a good place for work meetings. I would pick a coffee shop over a conference room any day.
Yeah.
For college, I lived in a coffee shop. I did all my studying there, and all our friends, we'd have study groups. Didn't you guys do that?
Oh, God, yeah, because that you need the – first of all, you need a place to meet. And second of all, when you're in college and you're studying and you're cramming, you need coffee.
Yeah.
So we always hung
and a
out
place
in the
to stay
shop.
Open
yeah.
late.
Yeah, and some of the coffee shops are open until 2, 3 in the morning, right?
Yeah.
When you go to a new place, is coffee where you're going to get your coffee the first thing you check out, Chris?
Yeah. Oh, gosh. How about before I even get on the plane?
Yep.
I map out. And listen, I love all coffee. So my fallback is always Starbucks because consistency, it's the same cup of coffee everywhere in the world. Mm. So I know what I'm getting when I go into Starbucks. But if I can find an individually owned coffee shop, I look for that. I'll Google and like, where's the best coffee shops? And then the great thing is there's all kinds of reviews and sometimes it gets heated and they're like, no, this one, no, that one. You got to have coffee when you travel.
No, I'm just saying, is it the first thing you do? I wish that someone would create the Coffee House Inn. in advance of your arriving,
nice.
They would have a contract with a potter, and your name would be
on the cup.
Sold. And it would be a nice
I'm
big
staying there.
Cup. You'd put it up on
yeah,
the
on
hook. The
hook. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
the roasters in the lobby.
Yeah, absolutely. You could smell nothing but coffee. And
you wouldn't need beds.
It would say.
Nope, up all night.
No housekeeping.
Nope. Nope, don't even spend time in the room. I've been up for 3 days. How about you?
Here.
Oh, God. And Alex, I think you said you wanted to put coffee beans inside the pillowcases of the inn.
So you smell it while you're sleeping. Nice.
You're not sleeping, Chris.
Oh, good point.
Remember? Okay. That was fun. We've got a great, great guest, one of the true experts at coffee. By the way, we spend billions, billions, and billions, and billions of dollars on coffee all over the world. In the United States, it's so much money, you can't believe it. That's how much we love coffee. We want to invite you to talk with us on Facebook. We've been talking about some of our favorite places to go, coffee houses. If you've got one, or maybe it's in a faraway location, it's a place that you absolutely adore hanging out, having that great, great coffee, 1 cup, 2 cups, 10 cups, let us know on Facebook. It's Faith Middleton Food Schmooze on Facebook. More mouthwatering conversation and fun ahead on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze, and I hope you will make a charitable contribution to feed the hungry. We're online now at foodschmooze.org, and we'll be right back. I'm Faith Middleton. You can sign up for our free podcast, meaning a copy of the show that arrives in your inbox, meaning you can listen to it anytime you want. You just sign up for it once at foodschmooze.org. And we are wall-to-wall on coffee on this show. Of course, I'm with the gang, Chris and Alex and Robin. And our new guest is Jordan Michaelman, and he's co-author of a book that I absolutely love. I read every word of this book. It is fascinating. It's called The New Rules of Coffee, A Modern Guide for Everyone. And Jordan Michaelman and Zachary Carlson are founders of Sprudge. And that's online. All the content is about coffee. So if you're a coffee nut and you love to talk about it, think about it, want to learn more about it, that's a good thing to check out. And I'm telling you, this book, I just learned so much through this thing. So welcome to the show, Jordan.
Thank you so much, and thank you for that kind introduction.
You're welcome. So what's the deal? Why has the quality of coffee stepped up no matter where you go, even the local bodega, I swear, in a gas station? It's all a little bit better. And is that because the demand from us as consumers, or is something going on with the beans?
That's a great question, and it's a complex question. So some of what you're talking about is demand that's sort of more and more people getting exposed to the idea that coffee can be something that's culinary, that it's not just study fuel or something to get you through a busy kitchen shift or whatever, but that it's actually really, really interesting and can be as delicious as something like wine or cheese or food or any of these other kinds of things that we love. Some of that comes from consumers, and then it also comes from the actual traders and growers, as coffee has this very colonial history, and this is something that we talk about a lot in the book. But it's like anything else, it's a product of the modern world we live in now, and there's sort of these new generations of coffee producers, coffee growers in Brazil or El Salvador or in Kenya or in Ethiopia, who are more and more being paid more money for higher quality coffee and are working directly with coffee brokers and traders and exporters to push that quality forward from a supply side. So it's really both things.
We can't not address this. This isn't like the Debbie Downer segment on Saturday Night Live. A lot of coffee production has involved slavery through time. And even today, while it's gotten better in various countries, even today, what workers are getting paid is not very much. Right, Jordan?
That is true. However, it's one of the things that makes focusing on this kind of culinary approach to coffee, caring about high-quality roasters, good cafes, one of the happy benefits of that. Not only does it taste good, but it's all coffee that's being bought and sold for considerably higher than like the International Commodities Exchange price, which is called, they call it the sea market price. That's for like bulk commodity coffees. So something that you might get in a pre-ground tub at the grocery store, that's going to be kind of tied to that pricing structure. And it's very, very low. But when you're buying coffee from like a very good coffee shop, we know the coffee roasting company and cafe Neat there in Darien, Connecticut, which I don't think is too far from where you are.
Right.
That's a good example for your listeners. They're buying coffee at much, much higher prices. The people who are producing that coffee are being paid way more. And all of it is happening in something that looks more like an exchange, fair exchange of money for artisan goods, like what you'd see in wine or cheese or some of the other kinds of industries that coffee, you know, hopes to sort of be able to break through some of the dark things in its history and push forward to look more like those things in a generation.
Yeah. I was just thinking, are there places that advertise their coffee by saying, we pay fair trade wages to the pickers? Focus on that. And so that if you're someone who wants to buy with conscience, do you know of any company that does that?
So there are many companies that make a variety of claims about how much they pay to their producer partners. And indeed, there's organizations like you mentioned, Fair Trade, which is, there's this concept of fair trade, but there's also a proper noun, Fair Trade International Organization, that certifies how much coffee producers are paid, and that's sort of a whole other thing. But really, anybody that's doing what we would call specialty coffee or third wave coffee is going to be paying above that sea market price. And on a national level, some really great examples that your listeners could log on and go and buy would be from companies like Counterculture Coffee in Durham, North Carolina, Joe Coffee Company right there in New York City.
Right. And P-Town.
George Howell Coffee in Boston has been doing this for decades. And if you really want to get into some of the kind of producer-focused stories or connectivity with the coffee producers, companies that really have a long legacy of doing that would include brands like Intelligentsia Coffee. They have a location in Boston. They're based in Chicago. Olympia Coffee Roasters out of Olympia, Washington, does a lot
of advocacy
around the producers. And I could go on and on and on.
Yeah, good. That's encouraging. And can you help us understand, first of all, I had no idea that coffee beans are fruit. I was just stunned by that at the beginning of your book.
That was a very intentional choice that we made. It's right up front in the book. We want to reclaim coffee as produce. It starts as produce. This is how we want to try to think about it.
I had envisioned these beans growing on a bush or on a tree. You know, I'd never really seen the plants that have the original beans. And
right. So
when I read that, and you said that they're kind of reddish, depending on how they're processed affects what the flavor is like. And then again, on top of that, how it's roasted, even how it's ground, all these things. It's like wine, the way it's treated in all these steps affects things. So then I started looking at these reports of the trend forecasters and some kind of big coffee association. And they said that they saw that among all ethnic groups, African Americans had increased the most in terms of wanting a more artisanal experience with their coffee. That was interesting. And they said last year, coffee sales in general stayed a little flat, but people were much more interested in the growth was in artisanal experience in things like cold brew, coffee, and bunches of other things. Have you found that to be true too?
Yes, absolutely. I think all of the above accurately reflects part of what we're reporting on regularly at Sprudge, and entrepreneurship and a rise in inclusivity of who coffee is for and sort of what it means to be an entrepreneur in coffee. The idea that that doesn't have to look the way it has maybe looked a generation ago, that it can be very diverse, it can be very inclusive, and that coffee's for everyone. It doesn't fit any kind of particular stereotype about who can love it or who can make a living by expressing it in an artisan kind of a way. It's one of the most exciting things that's happening right now in coffee here in the United States and around the world. And it's something that we find ourselves reporting on week by week, month by month for our daily work at the website.
I love that there are different reasons that people go to these coffee houses, coffee cafes, whatever you want to call them, in different cultures. I was reading that in Cuba, it's really much more about being together with people. And the coffee is the coffee. It's not this roast and this bean and I'll pay $120 a bag for this. It's
right.
The gathering place. You know how ice cream became gelato? And then it became the laboratorio, and it looked like a science experiment when you went in, and
sure.
it gave you this impression that it was unbelievable as a thing. Are you seeing that with coffee?
Sure, yes. The sort of showmanship of coffee, the idea that part of what justifies the price or connects with people that it's something special is definitely something we've seen, lots of different expressions of over the last decade. You know, I think it comes back to coffee, whether it's $120 a bag or it was 50 cents at the gas station, is a black cup of liquid. Like, you can't tell visually. It's not like a cheeseburger. You know, if you go to a really nice gastropub and you pay $15 for an awesome bar burger with, like, the local beef and, like, the imported Gruyere and all that good stuff, it looks different than a McDonald's two-for-one value menu. But with coffee, it doesn't. It's a black cup of liquid, you know, on both sides. And so that is where companies large and small have sort of said, okay, well, we need to introduce some theater into this thing so that we can connect with people for why our coffee, we're asking you $4.50 for it instead of the 50 cents that you would pay at the gas station. And there's also some truth to the sense that coffee is a cascade of variables, all the way back to how it's picked, and with every step and choice that you make for how it's roasted and brewed. So mastery of those variables is what it becomes, kind of the white whale for people who make coffee for a living and want to have that coffee be really beautiful for their customers. And so some of the theater too comes down to trying to master the variables and almost treating it scientifically or like a science experiment. That's where some of that comes from, too.
This is Jordan Michaelman, and he is co-founder of the online All Things Coffee site. It's called Sprudge. And his book is The New Rules of Coffee, A Modern Guide for Everyone. It is such a good read. It's about coffee all over the world and how the whole thing is evolving. And so I decided to go online and look up how old coffee cafes are, you know, and what would I find? And so this just blew me away. This is the 5 oldest coffee houses in the world.
Oh, I bet you I've been to one.
Okay. So this is, and I will slaughter these names because they're in other languages. So there's in Paris, Café Le Procope, and it is, been there, it's still there. Since 1686.
Ooh,
okay. And it looks so fantastic.
Okay,
I want to go
I've
there immediately.
I've never been in that old of one.
There is Cafe Florian in Venice. That's been there since 1720.
Oh, getting closer.
And it was the only coffee house at the time that allowed women. And that's why you saw Lord Byron, Proust, Dickens, and lots of women in this place, so good for Cafe Florian. There's a place in Rome called Cafe Greco, and that has been there since 1760. And it is still, some people say, the most elegant coffee cafe in Rome.
I bet, yeah.
And then in Vienna.
Oh, there it is.
Cafe Central.
Yes,
or
it
Central.
Is.
I don't know.
You've been there, Chris.
I've been there. I was there actually in Vienna. My cousin lives there, and she knows I love coffee. And she's like, well, if you love coffee, then we have to go here.
And?
Wow.
It is just elevates coffee. And it's not just the coffee. It's the setting. I don't know if you see pictures.
It's so gorgeous.
It's gorgeous. Like,
yes, but was it your ultimate cup of coffee, would you say?
It was my ultimate coffee experience. Maybe not my best cup of coffee, but sitting there with a little opera torte, and yeah, it was heaven.
So Lenin and Trotsky went there. I just want to say. And then there's Cafe Reggio in New York City, which has been around since 1927, Village Coffee House. Okay, those are the five oldest ones, at least according to one publication. I thought that was pretty cool. We want to remind you that on Facebook, we'd love to hear from you about your favorite coffee cafe, even if it's to stop in and buy the beans, or maybe it's a hangout place, you know, why you love the atmosphere or this particular coffee, whether it's fancy or basic. We're just interested in what everybody's doing with coffee out there the way we're doing it here. So, I mean, I see a lot of coffee on the table here. So we'll take a quick break, and then we'll be right back to talk about the new rules of coffee. We love the local. Please support your local food growers and food makers. For an on-demand podcast of the show, go to foodschmooze.org, and we'll be right back. Are you right to think that you're immune to the stuff? You're addicted to love. Might as well face it. You're addicted to love. Might as well face it. You're addicted to love. Might as well face it. You're addicted to love. Might as well face it. You're addicted to This is the Food Schmooze Party, offering the richness of life and coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including Westchester County, the East End of Long Island, the Hamptons, of course. The senior producer is Robin Doyen Aiken. And to hear this show on Connecticut Public, it airs Thursdays at 3 and 9 and Saturdays at noon. Podcasts and our curated recommendations are always online, including information about the new rules of coffee at foodschmooze.org. Jordan Michaelman, co-author of the book, is with us. First thing I want to know, Jordan, is I read this article. It's from the Smithsonian that Starbucks made a deal. I went to the island of St. Helena, which is, it's a 47-square-mile volcanic island, and it's a day voyage from Angola. It's between Rio and Southwest Africa, and it's had an up-and-down experience with coffee beans, but when it's good, it's supposedly, you know, it's that green bean thing. And so Starbucks started selling this St. Helena coffee for $145 a pound.
Oh,
and
wow.
So I just thought, what in the world? Is this nonsense, or have you tried this? I mean, what is it? What is it with something like this?
Over the years, I've had a chance to try a couple of different sort of similarly priced coffees. I have not tried this specific coffee from Starbucks, although my guess is Starbucks sort of has the magical ability that if you mention them in a media capacity, I'll probably get sent some now after being on your show. So it's this interesting sort of a thing. So St. Helena, that island, is part of coffee has this very colonial history. We talked about that briefly in the last segment. And one of the things that means is that it sort of got picked up and planted in different places around historic trade routes and, like, sailing routes. And so the green bean variety Bourbon that you mentioned actually comes from the island of Bourbon off the coast of Madagascar. Oh. That's not where it was first picked up from, but it was planted there by traders who picked up the original coffee crops in Ethiopia and Yemen. So it's got this long trading history back to the age of exploration. And this is where the stuff on St. Helena comes too. Starbucks, because of the size and scale of what they do, they get access to some really interesting and very limited and incredible coffees. And it doesn't surprise me that they would be coming in and doing something like this from somewhere like St. Helena. I've had coffees from Starbucks over the years that are from very limited, very sought-after crops in places like Jamaica and Hawaii as well, that you don't typically see at most kind of specialty coffee shops. And Starbucks can do it because they're Starbucks. So it's always interesting to watch what they're doing. And I'm sure it's good. My question would be, how dark did they roast it? You know what I mean? $145 a pound for some really rare coffee all sounds really interesting. But if you're scorching it, then I don't know how much I care.
Yeah.
If somebody has A5 Kobe Wagyu that's from like an heirloom herd in Japan that doesn't even really get brought into America and you have access to it, that's amazing. Yeah. But if you cook it well done and serve it with ketchup. How special really was it, you know?
My tastes change all the time, and so I go through streaks of, is that true for everybody with coffee, or do you stay in love with a particular kind? How about you, Jordan? I mean, can you name your ultimate cup of coffee because it was so extraordinary in some particular way?
Wow. Sometimes people who work in coffee talk about the idea of a cup of coffee or a shot of espresso that sort of changed their life or changed how they thought about coffee as a beverage, the idea that it could be something culinary. And you'll sometimes hear people call this a God shot, like a shot of espresso that made you see God. And I'm somebody who did have a very specific experience like that in my life. And this was back in around, I'm going to say 2006 or 2007. My colleague who I started Sprudge with was working at a very influential coffee bar in Washington, D.C. at that time. And I was out touring around the country with my rock and roll band. He had said, oh, you're in Chicago, you've got to go to this place called Intelligentsia Coffee while you're there. Their coffee is really amazing. And so I did. I went to the Intelligentsia Coffee in Millennium Park and had a shot of espresso. And it was like somebody turned the lights on what coffee could be for me for the first time. And I went back up and ordered another shot again right there and drank it again. And it sort of, everything's been snowballed from there for me.
Wow. Do you buy it and keep that stuff in your house? I mean, do you have access?
Sure. Yeah, that was with their espresso blend, which is called Black Cat. And they do still make it, but it's an ever-changing blend. They're trying to capture exactly what I would have had, you know, 12 years ago or 13 years ago. I don't know if there's a way we actually could. But, you know, I drink espresso when I go to coffee bars because making espresso at home is really hard and it's kind of expensive and it's really a labor of love. Like, you need to be a serious hobbyist. It's almost like getting into fixing motorcycles or another kind of hobby that really the amount of time you spend on it is part of the point, you know? So I don't have as much time to do all that. So I drink espresso when I go to coffee bars, and then when I'm at home or when we're in our offices here in Portland, we make a lot of brewed coffee, either hand-brewed or with like little home batch brewers that'll make you a nice pot of coffee for maybe 4 or 6 cups.
So I read with some interest that you said that cleaning out your coffee maker completely changes the taste of the coffee and makes for a much, much better cup of coffee. And so no matter what thing you're using, clean it, I think you said, once a month?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It makes a huge difference, and it's something that I've gotten into the habit of doing. Every time I go home to my mom's house, I'll clean all her coffee stuff for her, you know. You sort of just get into the habit of it. And yeah, it makes a really big difference. I think it's something that just doesn't get talked about that much for whatever reason. And it was something that we really wanted to try to make sure we spent a little bit of time talking about in the book.
Cleaning it with vinegar?
You can, although I would recommend that you buy, there's a different lines of products from a couple of different companies, some in the United States, some based in Australia, but that would be carried at any grocery store, especially any kind of fine food store in along where they have their coffee filters and bags of coffee. Buy products that are designed for it specifically that have the ability to take off. There's different kind of scales and particles. Coffee is really complex substance, right? There's like 350 million particles of compounds in every milliliter of how you grind it and brew it or whatever. And it's just this really complex stuff. So it means that it's capable of all these really amazing flavors, but it also leaves a lot of residual on whatever you use to make it in. So you're better off using products that are specifically designed for cleaning coffee equipment.
Okay. What do you think makes a coffee shop truly great?
You know, that's such a personal question, because what makes a coffee shop really great comes back to what you're looking for as a person, or what you want that day, or what your goal is. And for me, in my life, I think that that's meant different things. I mean, when I was in high school, what made a coffee shop great was that it was far enough away from my parents' house that I could sit out in front of it and have a cigarette and know they wouldn't drive by.
A clove exactly. Cigarette, right?
That's exactly right. Sure, a charm clove cigarette. Sounds good. Yeah. That my friends would be there, and maybe there would be a band that would play sometimes. That, yeah, to me, was what a great coffee shop was. You know, when I was in college, I went to the University of Washington in Seattle, and I spent a ton of time. We were talking about historic coffee bars, and in Seattle, where obviously Starbucks was founded, 20th century coffee history is very much alive there still, and there's a coffee bar called Cafe Allegro, which is in the University District in Seattle, and it's been open since the late 60s, so it's the oldest continually operating coffee bar in Seattle, and it's got this great sort of college vibe. It's very sort of ivy on the walls and professors and tweeds in it and stuff, and that to me felt like it was the most sophisticated thing I could possibly imagine doing with myself when I was 18 or 19, yeah, when I was going to college. So I think it really depends on you and where you're at in your life. You know, for me now, we talked a little bit earlier about some of the kind of growing inclusivity and diversity for sort of who owns coffee bars, who coffee is for, how that gets expressed around the country. And so I know for me, the experiences now that I get the most excited by is getting to kind of drop into another culture, or drop into another kind of community and a vibe, and go and sort of soak that up through coffee. That to me is the stuff now that I feel the most drawn to, and I'm the most excited by as a coffee drinker. But it's sort of always changing, and it's really personal things like, what do you want that day? Where's your head at? What's important to you?
I remember in college, like, you'd, depending on whether it's LGBT or like a place to go study, or if you're an art student, your coffee shop said a lot about who you were.
For sure.
And instant coffee has apparently, I know this from your book, there are still so many people who love the old school Maxwell House, you know, and
right.
But in general, people are making instant coffee now that is apparently.
Some's pretty good.
Yeah, so much better. So what happened there, Jordan?
It's an interesting thing, and it's something that I could not have predicted that this would be a story when we started the website 10 years ago. But 5 years ago, we started to see a couple of different people really trying to, and if you'll pardon the use of the phrase, disrupt this idea of what specialty coffee could be. And true to the disruption thing, it all came out of San Francisco, out of people in the Bay Area who had different sorts of tech experiences saying, listen, we think we can maybe solve this thing about coffee where if it's instant, it doesn't taste good. And maybe we can also use this to address this thing in coffee that says, well, once you roast it, it goes bad within, you know, 6 weeks or 8 weeks, depending on who you listen to and where the coffee's being roasted and stuff. So what if we try to, like, tack our way out of that being the reality and create something that is a little bit in its new product category of, like, instant that doesn't suck, or coffee that won't go stale in 8 weeks? And so a lot of very smart people in the Bay Area have been trying to figure this out, and a couple of them are on their way towards being able to say that they kind of have. With instant coffee specifically, it's sort of an deceptively easy solution, which is to say, maybe the problem with why traditional instant coffee to people who love third wave or specialty coffee doesn't taste that good isn't because of the process to make it instant, which means brew coffee and then you dehydrate it and then you rehydrate it using water. It's as simple as that. Maybe the problem is they were starting with bad coffee in the first place. Like, if you start with low quality coffee and then you make it into instant coffee, when you rehydrate it, you still got low quality
coffee. Bad coffee.
If you start with really good coffee, then you put it through that process and egghead your way through it and monitor the variables and like tech it, but really do that same brew the coffee, dehydrate it, and get it so you just rehydrate it by adding water. Maybe when you get to the end and you add the water, it will taste good because it was good coffee in the first place.
Hmm. Wow, that's interesting.
I have a friend on the opposite end of the spectrum. He has actually taken a Ron Popeil rotisserie roaster and modified it into a coffee roaster. So not only does he make his own press pot coffee every morning, but every week he starts his week by roasting the coffee for the week. And he just goes to his coffee coffee roaster shop in town, and they give him the fresh beans and he keeps them in his freezer. And then once a week he pulls them out and he actually roasts his own coffee. He has this so set up, he actually hooked onto the bottom of it a central vacuum that actually vacuums the smoke out. And I've been in his house when he actually did this. It was fascinating to see the first crack of the coffee and then the second crack, and he stops and it lets it cool.
Dumps
but I'm telling
it out.
You, it makes if you have it right out of the roaster shortly after it's roasted and then you grind it and make coffee, it can be that God cup.
No kidding.
A different experience, I bet, right?
Yeah, different experience. Because you start off with smelling the coffee roasting. So it's got to be that whole experience. So there are home roasters now, right?
Well, see, this is like the garagiste movement, right? People who in some suburban neighborhood and have 12 grape
vines. What's the famous one from California?
Screaming Eagle.
Sure.
And, you know, and then it sells for $1,200 a bottle, you know, kind of thing. This could be your friend. Mm-hmm. This is, maybe we'll see this, right? Jordan Michaelman is our guest, by the way, and we're picking his brain. He's co-founder of the online coffee everything site with Zachary Carlson. That's called Sprudge. They founded that together. And his book about kind of the new wave with coffee is called The New Rules of Coffee. And it is a fascinating book, I have to say. Where do you think it's all going in this last minute that we have, Jordan? What's coming up next?
One of the most exciting things about where coffee is going next is it appears to be resistant to Amazon. It's resistant to the Amazonification of the coffee experience. So even as almost everything in our lives for how we shop and how we consume is being altered into something that you order to your home, gets delivered to your door, they haven't figured out how to replace the experience of going to a coffee bar, being around other human beings, drinking this thing together, and having it improve your day. And so even in the big, big cities, you walk down Park Avenue in Manhattan and there's for rent, empty retail, people trying to fill retail spaces. But there are more and more coffee shops opening. This is true in big cities and small towns all around the country. Coffee is offering this growth industry of like economic viability, it's community building, and it has so far been resistant to people can order coffee for their home on the internet, people can read about coffee on the internet, but you can't replace that going to a coffee bar thing on the internet.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, thank goodness. That's right. I agree with you. And I think that it becomes more important as we lose going to the boutique or as we lose going to the grocery store, like as those things get replaced and get sort of Amazonified or whatever, that communal experience of getting an espresso at the bar, talking to the barista, sitting down at the table, meeting your friends, that can't get replaced, or at least not yet. I mean, maybe someday they'll be delivering all of it by drones, you know, who knows?
That's what I was thinking,
Coffee remains this really uniquely analog thing that I think feels urgent and important because of everything else that's happening.
Yes, with everything else that's happening, people are looking around and saying, how can we build community? And whatever that means to people, some people will be led to a house of worship, and
right.
other people will go to library readings, and some other people are going to go to coffee bars and wine bars, and some with a political flavor, others with an artistic experience offering. I think people do need community, and what a good way to gather around coffee. Jordan Michaelman, co-author of The New Rules of Coffee, a wonderful book, recommended highly. Thank you so much for being on the Food Schmooze. We could talk to you for hours.
Agreed.
Thank you, Jordan.
This was really fun. Thank you.
You're welcome. We're on Connecticut Public Radio Thursdays at 3 and 9 and Saturdays at noon. Weekdays, listen for my 60-second Food Schmoozes and never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton. Hey, don't want the party to end? Well, neither do we. Talk with us anytime online at foodschmooze.org.